Mary Newman joins me in the studio tonight. She's taught at Ohio University and the University of Malta and is a member of the International Association of Culinary Professionals. Tonight, we're going to talk about the book she co-authored with Constance L. Kirker. It is titled Edible Flowers, A Global History. Mary, I'm delighted to welcome you to Around Cincinnati.
Thank you, Barbara.
You have a lovely introduction to edible flowers, and I would love for you to start us off by reading that, if you would, please.
Okay, great. Ready? Perhaps it was luck, or maybe it was the work of the kitchen gods. After all, it was during Tet, the Vietnamese New Year, when the kitchen gods report the doings of mortals to the ruler in the spirit realm. Whatever the explanation, it was serendipitous that after 5 weeks researching edible flowers in Southeast Asia, we stumbled upon a brand new restaurant in Ho Chi Minh City named Chi Hoa. In Vietnamese, hoa means flower. And the first thing that we noticed on the menu was La Hoa, a flower hot pot. This was where we were meant to be. Stunning fresh blossoms of squash, daylily, white sodoao, flowers, lotus stems, and yellow velvet leaf buds made up the floral ingredients in our flower hot pot. All of these were cooked together in a light pineapple soup base that included chunks of salmon. The restaurant's brochure explained why the name had been chosen. Chi Hoa, which means flowers, is a common name of many Vietnamese women who are sophisticated, caring, and always bring great love into every meal they cook for their family. The friendly and accommodating manager of this shiny new restaurant summarized his philosophy for us. "Yes, we treat you like you are part of our family." His statement echoed precisely what we had learned in our research about the power of flowers in relationship to food that we eat. Everywhere in the world, both historically and in contemporary cuisines, the use of flowers in food has been special and exceptional, and the flowers themselves have always included with intent and care, never accidentally or without any purpose. Flowers are used in food by someone who cares about you and who cares about the beauty of what you are about to eat.
One of the things that's fascinating about your book is how early people cared about those they were feeding and making the food beautiful. And one of the earliest edible flowers is saffron, still, of course, very dear today. I learned from your book that it's mentioned in the Song of Solomon.
Yes.
So if you would talk about what saffron comes from, which sort of explains why it's so dear, its uses, the penalties for adulterating it during Henry VIII's time. Tell us about saffron.
Okay. Well, saffron is grown from the crocuses of a particular crocus, not just the ones that we have in the spring here in the United States, but a particular crocus that blooms in the fall. They pull out those three little stamens that are in the middle. Then they dry those, and it takes like 75,000 flowers to make even a little quantity that you can use. So it's very precious. People were paying in the Middle Ages what's equivalent to like $50,000 for beautiful containers to put their saffron in and to store it properly. If you adulterated it, because you can use like safflower, other yellow flowers, and make a pretend one, but it doesn't taste like saffron, doesn't smell like saffron. And you could be burned at the stake for doing it, or your head cut off, or hung, you know. So there were some major penalties for that. Would be kind of interesting if my mother-in-law knew that, my ex-mother-in-law. She always put yellow food coloring in her chicken pot pies, and I never knew why. I thought you were supposed to just put yellow food coloring. Turns out the Pennsylvania Dutch use saffron in a good chicken pot pie. And so she was just imitating saffron, not knowing it. She just put yellow food coloring in. Real saffron should smell really good, taste really good, and it makes this golden color. And that was so important in the Middle Ages, you know, gold. That's important. So if you made your food look like gold, it's good.
And so beside chicken pot pie, what are a couple of other dishes we might be
familiar
with?
Well, we probably have it in saffron rice the most often. But a friend of mine who's from Iran gave me a recipe for ice cream with saffron in it. So it can be used in savory and sweet dishes.
Yes, paella, I think.
Yes,
that is.
That's
paella. I was also interested to learn that some of the most common flowers we probably don't think of as flowers at all, but think of as vegetables. So talk about what some of those are.
That would be like capers, and they're just the buds of a flower, and so they don't open up. Almost nobody knows what a caper flower looks like. You know, you don't see that because you pull the buds off, and that's what you eat. And another one that's like cloves. Cloves is a flower bud also. And if you can get a hold of it, you can find cinnamon flower buds too. That's very much like cinnamon.
And so, are banana buds also
Banana flower is huge. It's about 12 inches long. It's a huge flower. And you can find them at Jungle Gyms, which I was amazed, but you found them a lot in Asia, and make a salad out of those.
Well, and then there are things that we commonly think of as vegetables.
Artichoke, broccoli. Those are actually flowers, yes.
The artichoke, it's actually a thistle, isn't it?
Yes, it's in the thistle.
But if we saw it in its native station, does it actually open up?
Or it does. It opens up to a beautiful flower that's about 6 to 8 inches across. I mean, it's beautiful.
This is a slimmish book, but it includes so much. The anecdotes are fascinating. You include menus that are centered around flowers and also recipes. So I was very intrigued by fairy butter.
Oh, I love it. My granddaughter loves to make it because she loves the name too. But, you know, it was made by Dolly Madison. She served it in the White House. So if you want to have a really elegant tea, you can serve some nice biscuits or muffins and you have fairy butter and maybe some flower teas like a lavender tea or something. And maybe put some jellies and jams like a lavender jam or a rose petal jam. And you've got a very, I don't know, elegant tea, mm-hmm. and all you've got is teas invested in a little butter, but it just looks so elegant.
Yes. So how did they make fairy butter? There was a lot of mortar and pestle involved, I think. Yes.
Well, you hard boil an egg, and then you take the yellow part of it, and you use a mortar and pestle and grind it up. Add butter, add a little bit of confectionery sugar, and then orange blossom water. That's mm-hmm. why it's in the book, because of the orange blossom water. And it just is a delightful, flowery smell.
Your book's very nicely organized, so it's both chronological and geographic, and it starts in the ancient world. So I'm interested to know about your travels and your research in creating this book.
Well, the book was written with my sister, and we love to travel. So we traveled together to write this book. We went to Vietnam for a month, and we saw some incredible things. We took an overnight train to this area north, which is right on the border of China and Vietnam. And we took a little cab kind of thing and ended up in a couple people's different houses. And they showed us how to make what's called seven-color rice. And each of the rices is made with a different flower that makes it a blue and a purple. And you know, they have seven colors. And it's to honor, and it's only made at a festival, to honor a war that lasted 7 months. So each month has to do with a particular month of that war. So it was just fun. It's got some history. We got into people's homes. These women were showing us how to make the rice. It was good. We had a good time.
And so then from Vietnam, where did you go? And how many miles total did you travel?
We spent about a month in Vietnam. We also had gone to Mexico together. We've been to Europe together. Actually, we've been around the world together. We've been a lot of places.
What fun. What fun. This is probably like asking your favorite child question, but do you have a favorite flower, or is there something you use commonly, you know, in your everyday cooking?
I think I like the rose syrup or rose water. You can do either one, but I love the syrups. You can buy syrups in the store, and that's one of the things I wanted to emphasize with this book is there's a lot of products out there. You can buy rose syrup. You can buy saffron syrup. You can buy elderflower syrup. So you can buy almost all these flowers in a syrup form. And one thing I had fun with the last couple of years, as you know, my husband's a ghost hunter.
Yes.
We have a big Halloween party. I dress up like a witch or a fairy, and I've got this big cauldron that's got a weakened lemonade. Then I've got all these little vials that have the different things in, like rose water. And I say what it's for because flowers mean something. Rose, passion, love, lavender, memories, you know. And so I have each of these flower waters or syrups, and we let people choose which one they want, and they think about it for a long time. I think I want passion tonight, you know, and so I scoop out some lemonade and add a little bit of the rose syrup, and, you know, they have passion for the night. So it's been kind of fun.
Well, you obviously love this as well as having fun with it, as well as doing your research. So I just want to mention to folks that if you're going to try this at home, and hopefully they will, just remember organic flowers are what you want to use.
So often people say, oh, aren't you afraid to eat that? And my PhD is in toxicology. So there's a lot to consider. For example, some people are allergic to things.
Yes.
But people are allergic to strawberries. And we don't say, oh, strawberries are toxic. You can't eat those. Some of the flowers have medicinal benefits, like hibiscus tea helps with reducing low blood pressure. Basically, it's a diuretic. But watermelons are diuretic, and we don't say, oh, you can't eat watermelon, that's bad. You know, so there's a fine line between medicinal and, you know, just fine. So allergic is a big thing. Medicinal uses, don't try to treat yourself. I'm not, well, I am a doctor, but not the kind of doctor that can help you. But just kind of keep those things in mind. Maybe start small. You know, you rarely eat a salad of flowers. You eat a couple flowers on top of your salad, yes, and it makes it beautiful. You, yes, don't have to have a whole bowl of nasturtiums.
Well, certainly your book will be both a wonderful guide as well as an inspiration. Mm-hmm. Lovely anecdotes and facts, and the illustrations are wonderful too.
Well, my sister's an art history professor. She did a lot of the illustrations, she did a lot of the photography, and a lot of the aesthetics. You mentioned to me earlier the deviled eggs, the flowers on top.
Yes.
That was one of our first forays into doing this. And when she took them to this 4th of July picnic, everybody went, ooh, ah, love it. Then they didn't eat them.
Right. Didn't want to spoil them.
It seemed weird. Yeah. Men don't sometimes like to eat a whole flower. It just seems weird. So it was funny. So she's been giving lectures on the aesthetics of edible flowers, trying to get into people's minds. What are they thinking? Why do they choose not to eat it? Why do they pull it off and put it? They might like it there, but they put it off to the side and don't eat it.
Just not acquainted with it, but your book should do that in a wonderful way. I want to thank you so much for the book and for visiting with us tonight.
Thank you.
Just delightful.
I hope you enjoyed it.
I've been talking with Mary Newman about the book she co-authored with Constance L. Kirker. It is titled Edible Flowers, A Global History. You'll find more information at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray. Thank you.